Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen, you're listening to the Casterbras podcast with a K. Don't worry about other podcasts. Let them gawp, let them gape. Did you know that we're available on Casterbras.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com and Audioboo? Well, you do now. Good, isn't it?
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Christian Corley. This is the Casterbras podcast with a K. And with me are James McLean and Brian Terranova.
That's us.
That's us.
Huzzah!
Indeed.
Okay. Now, we did mention last time that we would have Colm Sansom Reagan on the show with us this time. That's not happening this week. We're hopefully going to reorganise that for another occasion. So instead, we're just going to talk hardcore Doctor Who, which sounds quite disgusting, actually.
I didn't want to say it.
No. It's been a few weeks since the three of us have chatted together, really, isn't it? Because obviously we had Gareth last week. And the week before that, we had that other fellow, Nick Roboto. So it's been a while since it's just been the three of us. So have we been up to anything interesting?
No.
No.
Oh, right, great. Well, fascinating chaps you are.
Indeed.
So that's the end of that conversation. You're shooting me down on that one, are you?
Have you been up to something interesting, Chris?
Have I been up to anything interesting? No.
Okay.
But then
this is going well.
Yeah, I know. But then I'm kind of a married dad of 2 3-year-olds, so interesting to the podcast. I mean, the most interesting thing I've done probably is watch the Star Wars, other than watching Ripper Street, which we mentioned last week, and I don't know if James wants to talk about it later. Most interesting thing I've done is watch the Star Wars trailer, to be honest. So,
yeah.
And well, I you say that actually, and that because there's three, isn't there? There's three trailers. There's the real trailer, there's the Lego version, and then there's the amazing satirical George Lucas edit, which is arguably the best version just because it's so amusing. But I watched it online, and then it came on TV. It was on, is it a Sunday brunch show on a Sunday lunchtime? Well, morning, between morning and lunch, between breakfast and lunch on Channel 4. I think it's called Sunday Brunch. And they played it on there, and I was watching it with Bruce, and he was absolutely transfixed. He wanted to watch it again and again, and he kind of knows that we can watch things again and again because we've got like the Virgin Media TiVo. So that was kind of amazing, seeing it seem so new. I'm glad it was that trailer that he saw, not a trailer for The Phantom Menace, but I digress. So, yeah, that's a bit of Star Wars talk for you on the podcast with a K.
Now, I take it he saw the real trailer, not the George Lucas edition.
Yeah, he saw the real trailer, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Because you might have had some issues there when the movie wasn't quite as jam-packed with TIE fighters.
Absolutely, yes. I'm going to mention this just in case you think there's something weird going on. James does not have a cocaine habit. Well, he might do, but that's not what you can hear. He's got just a little bit of a cold, haven't you, son? Yeah. It's that bad that he has to talk to us in sniffs, basically.
No, I was just laughing at the George Lucas trailer. Not
oh, you just
that.
Watched it?
Yeah. Very
good. It's
good,
isn't it? Yeah. I think that's going in the show notes, isn't it? Okay. Now, Peter Capaldi's done some public appearances of late. It's too early to talk about the Christmas episode, but the Jenna Coleman thing seems to be rumbling on and on and on, doesn't it?
Yes.
So we will sort of skirt around Christmas until we know a bit more about it, probably next week. But I'm going to just pull up the recent article, which by me, actually. I wrote an article on Casterbras. Must be 2005.
How unusual.
Yeah, it must be 2005 or something. And in which... it was reported in the Mirror that she was staying midway into Series 9 with a show source, or in to just translate that, made-up person, stating that when it came to Clara, they had to tear up the scripts and start again. BBC have told Radio Times, this is speculation, so we won't be commenting. Viewers will have to watch the Christmas episode to find out. And I gave our feelings, our thoughts on it at the end, basically saying that we've heard that she was definitely leaving, but most lately that she actually hadn't made her mind up. And that was about 10 days ago, so probably nearly 2 weeks now. So it's a strange situation, and I do suspect that there's a good at least 70% of obfuscation over this. Just in order to create mystery over the Christmas episode. There's no way they can be going into something that's going to start shooting in a couple of months' time without knowing.
Mm.
That's my feeling.
Yeah, they have to know one way or the other. But, you know, it's not uncommon, I guess, in TV shows for last-minute changes to take place. But the only thing I can imagine that would do that is if she had another gig that kind of fell through, you know?
Mm.
But really, I don't know. I don't buy it. I'm assuming we talked about it, I think, before. It's either the whole Danny plot line is done or it's not, you know. And if it's not done, then of course she's not going anywhere.
Yeah. James, your thoughts?
Not sure. I don't know. I mean, from what we'd been told previous, or you know, rumors we'd heard, it's just very weird. Because I have a feeling something has happened, and I have a feeling that she was leaving, and I wonder if this is a political thing, whether something has changed internally and she's coming back. I don't know. For something, as you say, for this to change so late in the game, if it is true, it would suggest something little more than an actress is saying, I'm coming back, mm-hmm. or I want to come back. It would have to be something larger than that, I'd have thought, whether they would go to such rewrites at this late stage.
We did hear rumours of her being cast in a period piece, didn't we?
Yes.
A few months
there were
ago.
Rumours.
Yeah. So it's all very interesting. We're going to find out at Christmas, basically. So, you know, we don't have long to wait to find out what's going on here.
The only other option, of course, is that there is something in her personal life where she was given the option, or there was the option that she might opt out. But it was left fairly open, so if she wanted to come back, they'd be prepared for it. Do you see what I mean? So there mm-hmm. could have been something where there were some extenuating circumstances which gave her leeway, and so they're already on either side.
Yeah. And it could be, I guess, like a Martha situation too, where if she does leave at Christmas, there's nothing saying that they couldn't revisit her again in Series 9.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay. Now... there's been some trailering going on over the weekend. There are people who won't know or may not have seen one of them because it was region block. This was the BBC One trailer. And this was it's not a Doctor Who trailer even. It's basically a trailer for BBC One's Christmas stuff, only it's a kind of a historical BBC One Christmas campaign. Have you seen this, Brian?
Yeah, actually, I think I have seen that one. It goes through all the different Christmas specials through all the years. Not Doctor Who, but like just BBC.
Yeah, just BBC stuff. Yeah.
I did see that, actually.
Okay.
It's amazing to me, too, how many Christmas specials of the UK I've actually seen, too, going through there. Not all of them, obviously. Some of them I didn't know what they were, but there are so many good ones in there. But I also noticed, and I only watched it once, so if it breezed by me, then I missed it. But I also noticed that when it got to the new series Christmas specials, they really only showed David Tennant. There weren't any Matt Smith shots.
Yeah, I noticed that as well, yeah. I watched it a couple of times looking for more than just that.
Yeah, so they get the first Doctor and we get Tennant, but not Smith. That's interesting. I mean, it may just be a timing thing. I'm not trying to make anything out of it. I'm just surprised to see that, you know?
Yeah, it probably was more of a... there's plenty... I mean, the one foot in the grave with the gnomes... there was a garden full of gnomes, which you might have spotted, and that's an episode of One Foot in the Grave. I don't even think that's a Christmas special.
Really?
I think that was just a standard series episode. If I recall correctly, that's just a 30-minute episode as normal that happened to be shown over Christmas, but not an out-and-out Christmas special, which they did several of. But they did one that wasn't a Christmas special, in inverted commas. I think... because usually they go feature-length for Christmas specials, usually, you know. And I'm pretty sure that one isn't one of them. So I don't. Th- I, it's there's probably a lot of people had hands in what was chosen to go in there. So, it's a lot of fun. Quite enjoyable. And there's also the Paddington trailer as well, which has got Peter Capaldi and Hugh Bonneville in it.
This one I haven't seen, actually.
You haven't seen it? It's actually quite... Are you familiar with Paddington?
Yes.
You are? Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how well-known Paddington was beyond the UK and darkest Peru.
I think it's one of the things over here that isn't quite as underground, I guess, if you want to say, you know, or cult, as they call it. I think a lot of people are pretty familiar with Paddington.
Okay. Let's have a listen to this and see if anyone listening who hasn't already seen this can spot Peter Capaldi. You'll spot Curse of the Black Spots Hugh Bonneville straight away, probably.
There's some sort of bear over there. Probably what? Selling something.
Hello there.
Mary.
Hello.
This young bear needs our help, Henry. What are you going to do now?
Probably just sleep over there in that bin.
That's the spirit.
It's just one night.
Do bears even have names?
My name is...
Right.
You try it. Mr. Brown, that is extremely rude.
Perhaps you'd like an English name.
An English name?
Paddington.
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 Paddington! Sorry.
I like it.
He's going in the attic and I want you all to lock your doors.
You're right.
All good. That bear is a danger to this family.
Awesome.
Tomorrow, that bear is out of here.
This is Paddington.
He's a bear.
You see there?
That creature means a great deal to me.
Is he in danger?
He is now.
The furry menace is home alone.
I'm going to stuff you, bear.
I beg your pardon?
Paddington's the best thing that's ever happened to the children.
Hot wind, too hot wind,
but I like it.
Well, I hope I don't look weird.
It doesn't matter that he's a different species. Or that he has a worrying marmalade habit. Paddington's family.
Paddington? Coming!
What this family needed was a pinch of chaos. Aha!
There you go. There's quite a few people in that movie. Did you spot Peter Capaldi?
I actually didn't.
No, you only. He had a Cockney accent.
Ah.
Ah, yeah. He's a person. I could see that when they said he's a bear.
And he was another. Him.
Yeah. And he had another line a little later on. Jim Broadbent's in there as well. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you actually see, actually hear him or not. I think it was just a facial visual thing. So that looks. Do you know that's looking? That was going to be Colin Firth as Paddington, but they decided he was too stuffy, so they cast Ben Whishaw from Skyfall, who played Q in Skyfall.
He's
the voice of Paddington. I think they've probably got it just right there as well, because Colin Firth does have that kind of slightly. Well, everyone knows Colin Firth, don't they? Know how he tends to deliver things largely in the same sort of. Way like a kind of a more buttoned up Hugh Grant sort of delivery, and I don't want to in any way offend Colin Firth fans or draw any detriment to his acting ability, because he's always seems to be a convincing actor. But I can see why they swapped him for Ben Whishaw, swapped Ben Whishaw in there. So Peter Capaldi in that trailer, and I wonder, you know, I was thinking at the weekend, David Tennant, he kind of went to America, didn't he, to make some movies, or get on TV and make movies, whatever, and it didn't seem to really happen for him. Grace Point aside, it doesn't seem to have happened for him, really. Whereas you've got Matt Smith seems to have done it effortlessly. And Peter Capaldi just has always popped up in movies. So that's not really a thing that he's probably particularly interested in seeking out as a big ambition, because it's something that he's done already. And I was kind of wondering why it's worked out for Matt Smith and not for David Tennant.
Did it, though, is the question I have, because look at what he's doing. He's stuck in, like, niche sci-fi films, you know, and it's like, and I like sci-fi films, but, you know, and you know, he's got the new Terminator film, but I think Terminator's long since had its day, to be honest. But I look at the roles that he's getting here, and it just seems like he's definitely typecast, mm-hmm. and he's just kind of saying yes, you know, to jobs. And I don't want to say that in any slight to him, but that's how it feels to me. Like, even Karen Gillan, like getting Selfie was a good thing, because that was something completely different for her character. Well, you know, sort of completely different for her character. But doing, like, Oculus and so on, it seems like that's what happens. David Tennant came here and he got Fright Night, you know, and then she got Oculus. And then Matt Smith got the Terminator. It's like they're all kind of in the same vein kind of thing, you know, and it's like I don't really see anybody breaking out doing anything tremendously different, unfortunately. Now, Smith is making movies, yes, but I honestly haven't really been impressed with the ones that he's been cast in. Like, I'm not going to see any of them, you know?
How do you know?
Because the ones that I've seen and heard about, they're just not of my interest.
But you don't know that you're not going to see them.
I kind of do.
Well, no, you don't, for sure.
Why is that?
For definite, because it hasn't happened yet.
What do you mean?
Well, you haven't seen the movies, so you don't know that you're not going to see the movies, because they haven't been made yet.
Right. You see, the thing is, I know me, and I know when I'm not interested in seeing a movie, I don't watch it.
But what if you just happen to see it? Then you've seen it.
How would you just happen to see a movie?
Would it be on TV?
Which I don't watch.
So.
I watch Netflix and I watch DVDs. I don't watch TV. So it's going to be kind of hard. Well, you know, in fairness, okay. Unless I'm away at a hotel, there's a chance that I might one day happen upon one of his movies. So there you go.
Okay.
See, I think the difference here is that both Smith and Tennant have made headway into the US based on their, at the time, their current trending through with Doctor Who. What remains to be seen is when that trending fades, whether they can carry themselves in America, and I don't think they will. I think Cameron, I know we said the other week, I know Christian said that the fact that Selfie's finished won't affect her film career. I think it probably will.
I don't think it will. Not after Guardians of the Galaxy.
But that's already going, and it's still only a bit part in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's not the massive major part, and it's
they talked about writing her a bigger part in the next film.
Yeah,
they talked about bigging up her character already.
Well, you can say that, but again, I don't believe that she'll make it. The part in that poll, because people who do what she does in that film is not iconically her. It's not her template. I'm not totally convinced. Where she'll be bankable will be on her looks, or that's where I'd have thought Hollywood will see her being bankable. That film does not promote her bankability factor. I don't know whether it's going to. Selfie will damage her. There's
he did
no
say bankability, didn't he?
What?
I'm just checking. Carry on.
Yeah. Selfie will damage her because, you know, whether it, even though it wasn't her fault, she, you know, that will cause tentativeness in sort of casting her in those roles. It inevitably does, because money's been lost on that. It does have a knock-on effect with Matt Smith, and especially with Terminator being not exactly having good vibes at the moment already, could be a problem for him. If one wants to look at someone who is doing very well despite coming from cult niche, it's Cumberbatch. You've got a man there who came from a similar sort of show, who has broken totally away from that show and is like a disease that sort of...
Yeah, stop it. I'm a bit bored of Benedict Cumberbatch. I was hoping we could avoid him in the podcast.
Well, exactly. But unfortunately, you can't in film. he is doing, he has gone beyond his niche, even though he does still sit in the niche occasionally.
I know you wanted to avoid him, but I'm kind of sad to hear you say that, because it's really very interesting for this conversation, because
I want to see him acting. I don't want to see him turning up on 15 TV shows or radio interviews or website interviews telling me what he's not doing.
That's exactly where I was going with this, though. You get people like David Tennant, Matt Smith, and Benedict Cumberbatch who do these, you know, what used to be originally like cult TV show things, you know, which just had a small following that exploded now, and thanks largely due to internet fan base, you know, and you see what happens with them. People like us get a little bored of seeing certain people now where really they are good actors, and you know, they deserve to be doing good jobs and good work and so on. And I say this because I'm going to sound a bit like a hipster here, I guess, but I first saw Benedict Cumberbatch in 40-something with Hugh Laurie. And he was my favorite character on the show, despite the fact that Hugh Laurie was in it. I really liked the guy. So then when I found that he was doing Sherlock, I thought, well, this is cool. I like this guy. And it's sad to like watch somebody who you actually admire them as an actor start to have people start to hate them just because they're seeing their face all over the place too much, you know? And I never said
I hated him.
I know you didn't. No, I'm not even saying you. I'm just saying I've seen a lot of it on the net. But I was interested to see you bring that up, because here we are talking about Matt, Karen, and David, you know, trying to make strides based on, you know, this one character that they played, skyrocketing them to fame or to notice, and then bringing over here. And here Benedict's actually doing it, you know, and it is interesting, because maybe it does show something there. And I hate to say this, like to David, Karen, or Matt, but it does show what Benedict has as an actor.
Well, I would say primarily with Cumberbatch, probably his success is that he's got a very strong, neutral, thick, distinctive British accent. And that sells very well in Hollywood, because you can use that in so many ways. Matt Smith doesn't. He's got a very nice voice, very English, and I think he's a great guy, but he hasn't got that timbre, which I think is what is perpetuating and really pushing Cumberbatch forward. Plus the fact, you say, Brian, he's a very good actor, and he's got an iconic look too.
That's a good package, though.
But that, Pardon? I think, is what carries him.
Did you say that?
He's got a good package.
Yes.
Wow.
Bankability, yeah, talking about tents and now packages. Good God, it's a podcast with a filth.
I think the joke is this is one week where I'm not actually trying to be filthy. I'm not trying to throw in the cards, and they're just rolling out.
You know what, you do bring up a good point, though. Like, he does have that voice that people just want to listen to. And I think I've said this before about Paul McGann as well, and even Pierce Brosnan. They just have those voices that you just want to hear. But at the same time, too, if you don't have a voice or an accent like that, generally, for a lot of British actors coming here, it's very key if you can do a convincing American accent. And, you know, because obviously that helps them get other parts that aren't just the British guy, you know, which thankfully they've broken away from a lot over here. But and I say that because you watch bits of Selfie, you watch David Tennant in Grace Point, or even, you know, his the Rex series that he had done, and you hear their American accents, and they're not 100% spot on. I don't know if I've heard Matt Smith do one yet, to be honest, but I was watching recently Californication. And I heard, and now I was into season 7, I think. And I heard the actress, and unfortunately I've forgotten her name, but the actress who plays David Duchovny's wife in the show, they were having a conversation, and she said, you know, and I figure that this is something, you know, we should talk about. And I said, figure? I said, nobody here says figure. They all say figure. You know, and I said, oh my God, is this woman British? And I looked her up on IMDb, and it turned out that she is British. And for
seven years
of a TV show, I had no idea. I can look it up for you.
Oh, no, you're all right. Don't bother.
No. Let me do that, because, like I said, I've forgotten her name, and I feel bad doing that, because here I am talking about how good she's doing. And she's great on the show. That's right. Yes, that's it. And she says it's Natasha McElhone.
Oh, right. She was in the Truman Show.
Oh, was she?
Wasn't she? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the same girl. And she was in Ronin as well.
Yes, she was in Ronin. I just saw that here as I was going by. But yeah, she's great. And I think that's that's a huge helpful thing to them. Like, if you she's can sound Irish. Convincing.
Is she? She's not English. She's Irish.
I think it still goes.
Okay. I don't think they noticed.
She was born in Walton on Thames, London.
Okay. She's English then.
But I mean, you know, and that's, again, it's not a slight, because I do think, you know, obviously it's great when actors from all over can come over here and do great here and vice versa, because, you know, I've been paying attention to a lot of actors that are American working in British shows. And you know, I, as a matter of fact, I was just watching recently The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
All right.
And I was enjoying the heck out of the fact that I know half of these British actors that are all over the place. I mean, Colin Baker was even in an episode.
I think I'm in an episode. Everyone's in it.
Right? Seriously, everybody is in that. And you know, I got to watch Indiana Jones. Well, what's it? Sean Patrick Flynn, right? I got to watch him beat up Daniel Craig. Which just says that James Bond can be defeated by Indiana Jones. You know, it was incredible. No, but it was really cool. It's really cool to see all that. But it's interesting. I love when you can have that kind of you know, kind of mixing and mingling of the actors between the countries and so on. I think that works great. So I do think David Tennant, Matt Smith, and Karen Gillan could do very well over here if the bulk of the mainstream casual audience could get past the fact that they have to, you know, listen to somebody when they speak, you know, instead of close their mind. And I think that's a big part of the problem. Like, people like myself and the people who follow Doctor Who and a lot of these types of shows, we're all used to it. You know, it's just we love these people because we love the talent that they bring to the table. Whereas a lot of the mainstream, just casual viewers, as I say, they just, you know, they don't want to have to sit there and try and figure out what somebody said if they're kind of new to an accent, you know, and it's kind of sad to think that way.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's move on. You may have seen, dear reader, listener, and you two guys may have seen it as well. We had a kind of collection of dodgy crap you can find on eBay with Doctor Who connections on Castovers. This was inspired by John Guiler, that guy, who shared a really disturbing image from an eBay auction that weirded me out. He even made a film about it. I mean, in fact, I might just play you a clip from this Vimeo movie. Internet traffic not really giving us a chance.
Spare a thought for others this Christmas. For only £5, you can fully clothe a Dennis Fisher Cyberman. This is Declan. The following story contains details that some viewers may find distressing. Made in Hong Kong in 1976, he was abandoned in 1979 and left naked. Thankfully, his chest unit remains, which he requires to provide life support functions. But if he didn't have this, he would die. Die. Die.
It's just really difficult expressing how I feel. Coming in 1976, I was the bee's knees. Everybody thought I was great. And by 1979, I was lonely and naked at the bottom of a toy box. I just don't know what to do. I mean, Christmas is coming up as well. I don't know if you know.
Yes, we know.
Just don't know what to do. I mean, I'm for sale on eBay now. I can only hope that somebody nice buys me.
Spare a thought this Christmas. Don't turn Declan and others like him away. Sign up now at www.cybercharity.org.uk and we'll send you a form that will take you just short of 6 hours to complete. It's Christmas. Well, it kind of has been since August, hasn't it? Don't delete. Make a cyber someone replete. Thank you. Please don't let Declan down.
Is that
nice?
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I first saw the photo, it was basically the Cyberman with the chest unit. There's no clothing on it. I'd always assumed that the clothing, and these are Revenge of the Cyberman designs, was in some way glued or stitched to the figure underneath. I've handled one of these. I had no idea the clothes came off. Now, I'm not saying I have some kind of morbid curiosity with what's underneath the Cyberman doll, it never occurred to me to take one off. So when it was pointed out that actually this isn't unusual, it's not like a Toy Story-esque toy mutant, just like a naked body with a Cyberman head and a chest unit. It's actually, that's how they were, but the outfit, as it were, has been lost, and he's just got the chest unit. But it prompted me to find some other things. Have you guys seen this article?
Yes.
You have. Have you seen that Oud? You haven't, or you have?
Oh, the Oud, yes. God, yes.
What is wrong with? Yeah. What is wrong with that?
Yeah.
It's like whoever designed that completely just missed what the Oud is. Surely it's the most disturbing thing. And it made me wonder whether you two had seen any really, really dodgy Doctor Who merchandise. Really, really poor, tatty, slightly disturbing Doctor Who merchandise over the years. Official or unofficial?
You know, I'm sure I have. Nothing really disturbing is coming to mind anymore these days.
You bought it all.
Yeah, I bought it all. No, with collecting, you know, obviously you scour eBay and so on, and you look for bits and bobs that you may need or want. And a lot of times you find stuff that are marked as screen accurate. They're just so not. I mean, they're like so far from. I don't understand how the person selling the item can even begin to say screen accurate. So I don't have any disturbing stories, but it's just amazing how somebody can look at a rock, you know, and say it is a screen accurate diamond from a particular episode. You know, it's like they don't look anything alike, and I don't get that. So I'm surprised what floats on eBay. You know,
I have one.
What's that?
Go on.
Okay, you're sending us a link. This is interactive. I do apologise, listener. We're about to see a piece of Doctor Who merchandise.
No,
it's not, is it? God, no. God, no. I can't see anything other than the heading of the tab, which says, "It's happened, a sonic screw." And that's all I know so far. And judging by Brian's reaction, oh, now I've read the URL. A sonic screwdriver sex toy. Oh, dear God. Well, this is a classic.
It can't be unseen.
I've seen it now, yeah. Thanks, Michael of Geekgasms and haveageekasms.com and co-host of Police Box Paradox. You should be ashamed of yourself with your glorious goatee. Let's move on from that. Thanks, James.
Are you ordering one? You ordering
two,
one now?
Two. Yeah.
Thanks so much. Credit card details. Oh, yeah, baby.
So, if you, dear listener, have anything along these kind of lines that you want to let us know about, we're really interested to learn what horrendous Doctor Who merchandise is out there. If you can tone it down on the kind of adult side of things, though, that would be great. But either way, I do have to say that Oud, there's two things that really that annoy me in that article. There's the Oud, which looks like it's vomiting worms. And there's the snow globe, which just looks like the cheapest BBC paperweight ever. I'm surprised all the liquid hasn't leaked out of it, frankly. So if you can, if you do have anything like that, dear listener, then please get in touch via the usual means, the comments under the article on Casterbus or the audio kind of thing that we what am I talking about? Audio Boo or it's Twitter or the Facebook page. Those things that we talk about every week, and for some reason I have inexplicably forgotten about. Enjoy this week's podcast. Leave us a review on iTunes. Indeed.
Let's move on to it. Call the police.
And report, James. It was all his idea. It's recommendations time. Shall I? Do we need some kind of? It's recommendations time. That was quite good, wasn't it?
Not really. They got excited that there's something interesting coming on, like Doctor Who, and now it's just going to be us rambling through pretty much the same recommendations recommended 4 weeks ago.
Quite possible. Well, I'm pretty sure we won't.
Pauses.
I'm pretty sure we won't have the invasion this time, unless someone decides that we're going to have the invasion, and it won't be me. James, you haven't had the
new recommendation sound effect.
Yes.
Yes, I'd recommend that. Yes, good one.
James, you haven't had the opportunity to offer your recommendation for a couple of weeks, so it's your turn to go first.
Well, I would recommend the sonic screwdriver vibrator for a start. I think there's nothing better than to disappoint your date by not only revealing a Doctor Who item, but one that is also a female sex toy.
Who said it was female?
Well, it said in the article it was female. Okay. You've got to read these things, Christian.
I was frightened by the sight of it, frankly.
Yeah, you don't want to mix those up. But I would then consider the fact that I'd recommend DVDs where there is a very poor issue of continuity in clothing, which I think would bring me to Invasion. So one episode two, there's an error there, and if you like those sort of errors in continuity, the Doctor Who Invasion DVD, I think is a pretty good one. I will also continue the repetitious recommendations with Ripper Street, which I know you talked about last week, mm-hmm. which I've been thoroughly enjoying.
Okay, I've only watched the first episode so far.
Have you really? Oh, that's interesting, because yeah. I think it's probably one of the worst.
Right, I haven't had the chance to watch any more, unfortunately, as yet, because I was working quite hard last week. And annoyingly, my Amazon Prime subscription runs out on the 12th of December, so I'm going to miss the last episode.
Oh, that sucks,
because
yeah.
I'm not renewing for obvious reasons of cost.
No, it's a very good series. The format is very refreshing. I mean, they were basically given... Amazon gave them carte blanche. Mm. Just do what you have to do.
Yeah, I've seen lots of good reviews, and reviews, some of which mentioned that same thing that you were talking about a few weeks ago with regards to not having that problem with the time slot.
Yeah. It's a totally new situation for television, and it's quite exciting. There's a slight grumble from the linear television companies, you know, the BBCs and the ITVs and the Skys, that, you know, that Amazon doesn't release ratings. Mm-hmm. But why should they? You know, they don't have any advertisers to abate.
Well, like exactly,
schedule. It's such a different situation that it means that the gameplay changes totally. And it's very good. It does suffer a little, maybe, from being a little insular, like Series 2, a little mm-hmm. too central character focused. But they just do it so well. The script, the feeling, yeah. the costumes, the acting, the writing. It's just really, really good. I'd say please support it, because, you know, it's an innovative way to start doing television. It needs support to give people confidence to make these sort of slightly high budget shows.
Yeah. Did you? Do we know if it's going to be on the BBC?
Yeah, it will be.
It's going to be cut, isn't it?
Yes, like, it'll be probably. Edited down. And unfortunately for the Terranovas of this world, when it goes to the States, I believe it will be edited further to fit the shorter time slot.
Yeah, and that's surprising.
Here we can obviously do, for the BBC, can do an hour time slot. So they'll lose, you know, five, six, seven minutes. Yeah. America, you're looking at the 45-minute slot. That's a lot of footage you're going to lose.
It is, isn't it?
So, again, I assume it's stateside as well through Amazon. I'm presuming they're not regionalized these. So I would say if you're stateside, definitely buy into watching it ahead of time, because you will. I'm sure it'll be quite a compact and well edited show, because they'll have made it aware that they've got to truncate it for US television. Unless US television decides to give it an unusual slot, but I doubt they'll be able to. Yeah. So your best chance to see it in its full glory, stateside or Europe side, is to go to Amazon and support it.
The only place you'd probably see it in its entirety over here would be if it came to a public network, one of our public TV stations.
I'm sure it'll run on DVD as well. Yeah, but
well, yeah, naturally. I meant network. I meant on TV itself. But yes.
But I think it's good to get into the habit of supporting these sort of shows, because I think it is a, you know, the benefits of the scheduling, because they were told, you know, they thought that they, I believe what I was told that the production crew was told that they could do anything. They just thought that meant content. You know, initially they didn't realize they meant no. You know, do whatever length you need to do for an episode, because you don't have to have it scheduled. So if it needs to be 67 minutes, it's 67 minutes. It's 72. If it's 55, you know, whatever you need, you do it. And that's interesting. That's quite liberating.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's my recommendation.
That's a good recommendation. Obviously, it's one we've had before, but
that
shouldn't stop you, dear listener. Brian, your turn.
Okay, well, I mentioned it before, but I'm going to mention it now for a specific reason. I'm going to actually detail why I think you guys should watch this. But as I said, I've been watching some of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles on Netflix.
Love them.
And Netflix has the box sets rather than the actual episodes. So the box sets kind of linked two different episodes together, dropped the old Indiana Jones bookends, and kind of made movie-length episodes out of them. Reason I'm recommending this is because it was a little bit of a fun thing that I had noticed. And I'm gonna detail these backwards. I'm gonna tell you what I noticed in the second episode that I watched, which actually chronologically is the second story between these two, I guess. The second one I watched was called Masks of Evil, and it takes place set in, the particular scene is that I'm talking about is set in Venice, 1918, where young Indy, still working with the Belgian army, is being detached to the U.S. Army. And he walks into this office, okay, and it's fancy office, fancy wallpaper, you know, everything you expect from the 1900s, just things looking nice, even though they didn't need to be for such a military outfit, you know, everything's looking done up. Indy walks across the room, this balding man with glasses in a military uniform asks him his name, he gives his name, then the guy says, you know, he pulls a necklace out of the drawer and he says, this is a gift for my wife, but unfortunately it's broken. So Indy tells him, I can help you with that. And he gives him this other half to the necklace. They put it together. It forms a whole piece. The code is done. The balding man knows, hey, this guy is our guy. And he says, you can go in the room to speak with General so-and-so. And he picks up the phone. Indiana Jones goes, whoa, wait a minute. You mean actual so-and-so? And the guy just looks at him. He's now not holding the phone to his ear. He's covering the receiver. And he says, yes, go on in. And it's just, it's a nothing scene, right? Except for the fact that when you get to the episode prior to this one, which was called Adventures in the Secret Service, a scene set in France, 1917, it is the exact same office. It is the exact same actor playing the balding military guy in the exact same uniform doing the exact same scene. All they did was cut out the necklace bit of the scene, although you can still see it on the desktop.
Good God.
Yes. So I watched these two episodes and I was like, holy crap, this reminds me of that scene that we just saw a couple episodes ago. And so I went back. I actually took some video footage of this. I'm going to actually edit it together at some point this week and put it up probably on YouTube. But everything is the same. The uniforms are identical. The guy he is playing in the first episode, he is playing a French officer. In the next episode, he's playing an American officer. He's wearing the same exact uniform. Like, they didn't even try. Like, but I'm telling you, like, same actor. Like, they had to have done this on purpose. There had to have been something that they found funny about it, or they just thought we weren't going to notice. But everything's identical. It's ridiculous. But it's so funny. So I'm recommending Adventures in the Secret Service and Masks of Evil. For some reason, I think that's Mask of Evil. But anyway, they're both right now on Netflix. Check them out. It's worth it just for that scene alone, to be honest, those two identical scenes.
Okay. I didn't notice that, because I've got them all as well. I'll have to go back and look at those.
Oh yeah, check it out. I mean, like I said, I took some video footage of it. I'm gonna put them together. So if you don't check it out, you can at least wait for that. But check it out if you've got time, because it was just one of those things where I watched them so relatively close together that I was like, damn, I've seen this before, and I was like, wait, this is too similar. So when I went back to watch the first scene again, I was like, oh my God, everything's the same, except they didn't do the necklace bit. This is so weird. Even the actor is the same. Like, everything is the same. And then I noticed, wait a minute, the necklace is on the desk. Like, they clearly just cut the necklace bit out of the first scene. So now I'm actually curious. In the episode as it originally aired, before they were edited for these movie versions, if that necklace scene was in both of them. Because I'm curious, not, like, how they edited these movie versions together. Did they cut out any other content aside from just the old indie aspects? But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So definitely check it out. I was really surprised. I figured this out last night. I was falling asleep on the sofa watching this as I saw that scene, and it perked me right up to the point that I'm awake at, like, it's quarter after midnight. And I'm going back through Netflix trying to find the other episode for this scene just so I could get this, because I'm cracking up at it now. And I was like, I'm so wide awake, but I didn't care because it was so fun. Aside from that, the series is fun. Check it out. It's a good series.
That sounds like me the other night when our co-host, Mr. McLean, put a new photo of himself on Facebook, which looked a bit studenty. So that prompted me to go looking through several episodes of the early 2000s comedy series by Simon Knight called Hardware, which has Martin Freeman and Peter Serafinowicz in it. And they also have, there's a co-character who's a student, and they used to wind him up and get him to say something studenty, and then shout, "Student!" And I spent half an hour, it was like quarter past 12, when I managed to find the clip I was looking for, put it on James's Facebook, using that little timer bit on YouTube, so it would play from that point. Except, of course, that doesn't work on Facebook. So it just played the whole episode. Probably leaving James completely bewildered as to what on earth I was doing.
Tiny bit.
So awesome. There you go. Yeah. Okay, speaking of sitcoms, my recommendation is going to be Stephen Moffat's Joking Apart. The first series, which I'm a little bit more fond of the first series than the second. Funny show, Joking Apart. It's absolutely bloody hilarious. It really is genuinely funny. It's far funnier than Coupling, in my opinion. And the Grand Moff wrote it following a divorce from his first wife. Basically, that's what it's about. It's a comedy about divorce, but it's far jollier than that sounds. And it's basically farce of Fawlty Towers quality. The scenarios that the main character, played by Robert Bathurst, gets into are fantastic, and the dialogue's excellent. There's a little bit of shallowness in the portrayal of most of the characters, but other than that, that wasn't something that was of massive requirement in early to mid-90s sitcoms, not until coming towards 2000 where that kind of developed into something in the UK. So it's definitely worth watching, and it's available on DVD, and there's a lot of it on YouTube. It might be on eBay. There's a lot of it on YouTube, I discovered at the weekend. So if you can find anything from the first series, it really is very, very funny. So that's and it's also one of the few programs that I enjoy with my sister. Or ever enjoyed with my sister, actually, to be more accurate. There you go. Hello, Justine, if you're listening. You're probably not. Although one of your friends might be. So there you go. And, that's... I'm not sure entirely what we're doing in next week's podcast with OK Chaps. Throw me some ideas. We may have a guest, we may not. It's not written in stone at the moment. We may have two guests. We might have an entire pop band on. You never know. Probably
that,
not the
that
last...
That would be different. Thing.
That would be different, wouldn't it? Yeah, yeah, it's a podcast with a K, and it's the remaining members of Queen. I was watching, which is unusual in this house, I caught some of Sunday night's X Factor, which had Queen and Abbott Lambert on, which they call themselves Queen now, but really they're not Queen, because they're only half of Queen. So I don't know why they don't call themselves Qua. But anyway... And Adam Lambert, who's also from a some sort of singing competition in the United States. And I noticed Roger Taylor, the drummer in Queen, is turned into Malcolm McDowell, basically. He's very white, and he's always had big eyes. His hair's very white, and he's got a Santa-esque beard. And he reminded me of Malcolm McDowell in a film I saw him in, which he had a beard, and I can't remember what film it was at the moment. Did he have a beard in that Star Trek film?
Not really. It's like a couple day old beard.
Yeah.
Is it like that? Is it long?
No, it's a little longer than that. It's a little
just scruffy beard. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all he was really, scruffy beard.
Yeah. But slightly uninteresting. To regale you with that. Now, over the next couple of days, we're going to be running a new article on Casterbris concerning the activities of the Casterbris team beyond Casterbris. We might even call it Beyond Casterbris, actually. What a great title. I love the podcast with a K. Do look out for that, and I'm expecting some things from my two colleagues here as well to be able to... This is basically me informing them of this, by the way. just links will do, chaps. And we've got lots of really interesting things that the Casterbris team actually do when they're not doing Casterbris. And I'm not talking about work. I'm just talking about stuff that they do when they're not doing Casterbris. It's a really good list. That's that. And does anyone have anything to add to this week's Casterbris podcast with a K?
No.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to being able to talk about Christmas in a bit more detail next time. But until then, dear listener, it's a goodbye from the three of us. And this is normally where I would be prepared in the post-production stage to press this button here.
How can people read the credits?
Yeah, you can talk as much as you like. I turned you down.
Oh, thanks.